Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's May 14, 2012, and this is episode 335. A few weeks ago, I picked up the new Canon GPS receiver GP-E2 and have had a chance to use it a few times and draw a few conclusions. So today, we're going to take a look at this new device. Note too that this really is my first foray into the wonderful world of geoencoding or geotagging, so don't get too hung up on how I say things. I'm just finding my feet here. The terminology may be clunky, but hopefully you'll get the gist of what I'm trying to say. Also, I have an important announcement to make today, which might mean that we'll finally get a chance to meet in person, but as it'll take a while to explain, I'm going to save it for the housekeeping section at the end of the episode. So do listen to the end to find out what's happening. Let's jump in now though and take a look at the new Canon GPS receiver GP-E2. The timing of this GPS receiver from Canon is perfect in my opinion. You might remember that when Lightroom 4 came out, when talking about the Maps module, I said that this was one of the things that I'd been waiting for to finally get me geoencoding my images. I dabbled with creating track logs with my iPhone, but didn't like how much battery it sucked up. At least with my old iPhone, I think it was a 3G. And it also back then, there was no multitasking, so I had to keep it sort of turned on all the time, which really didn't help. I'd also toyed with the idea of buying a dedicated unit, but I didn't like the idea of adding an extra step to my workflow, using separate pieces of software to tag the images, etc. You probably already know that I'm just not one for adding extraneous processes that I don't believe to be fully necessary. And geoencoding, unfortunately, fell into that category for me until the Maps module was added to Lightroom 4. With the Maps module, it became easy and almost acceptable to the point that I started to drag images to the map to geoencode them with the GPS coordinates of that location. I know where most places that I visit on a map are, but for places that I might not be able to find, if I took a few moments to shoot an iPhone photo, which are automatically geoencoded, I could use those images as a reference. So I was finally able to get started and get excited about geotagging my images. Then though, just as that functionality was added to Lightroom 4, Canon announced the GP-E2 GPS receiver, which, although not the first receiver from Canon, it seemed to fit my idea of how easy this should all be. I could just slide it into the flash hot shoe on my camera and it would tag all the images that I shot. As we'll see later, there are still reasons to open an application that Canon provide for certain things, but basically, once I have my images tagged in camera, they just appear on the map in Lightroom. This is the simplicity that I was waiting for, so I ordered the GP-E2. The first thing that struck me with the GP-E2 out of the box is its size. I've seen how small the Nikon GPS receivers are and was expecting something similar in size, probably around a third of the actual size of the Canon receiver. The big difference with the GPS from Canon though is that it's totally self-contained with its own AA battery, and you don't need a cable to connect to the camera unless you want to use the flash, a flash or something else in the hot shoe that would require you to keep the GP-E2 off the camera. The benefit of having the receiver sitting right on top of the camera, though, is that it will not only tag images with the GPS coordinates, it also knows which direction the camera is pointing and embeds that information into the images as well. This information is only viewable with the Canon Map utility that comes with the GPE 2 though, and isn't yet available in Lightroom. Looking at the GPS data in the EXIF information in Lightroom, I don't even see this direction information, so I'm not sure if this will magically appear in Lightroom later if Adobe build this support into a later version, but I'm seriously hoping that they will do, and that it does. When you first turn the unit on, it can take a good minute to 90 seconds or so to get a GPS signal. I have noticed faster, but the majority of the time I'm finding that it takes well over a minute. Remember, if you're listening on your iPhone or an iPad, or in iTunes to the Enhanced podcast, you'll see the images that we're talking about right now. But, you know, as is often the case, these are some detailed diagrams and maps, so to get the most out of this, you'll probably want to go over to the blog at mbp.ac/335 and click on the images that we're talking about today to view them large in your browser. In this screen grab of the Canon Map utility showing the first day that I used the GPE2, literally minutes after I bought it, you can see that for a while after I turned the unit on, it tagged my images as being on the other side of Shinjuku Station in a totally different area to where I was. I drew some rough notes on the screen grab so that you can see how far out the first shots were. Note though that the GPS unit was still not even showing that it had a signal. So although it was way off, I thought that it was actually quite good that it tagged the images at all. The rest of the shots on this first screen grab also show a little bit of drift from where I actually was shooting, and I think this is because I was among tall buildings in Shinjuku which were probably getting in the way to a degree, and once you're in a less built up area, accuracy does increase, as we'll see in a moment. I had another day out with the receiver last week, and this time there were no tall buildings, although it was a park with lots of tall trees in some areas. You can see on this next map that it's in some areas the GPE2 went a bit crazy. The spots where it looks like a kid has scribbled on the map with a red pen are areas where I'd stopped to take some photos under some tall trees with a thick canopy of leaves. The areas where the lines are less frantic are the less wooded areas. This next screen grab shows the Canon Map utility with the images selected so that you can see the camera direction information. Unfortunately, I can't see a way to show both the image information and the track log in Map Utility, although that might be a pretty busy screen to look at even if I could. If you compare the last screen grab with this one though, you can see that most of the places where there is a concentration of photos being shot, there's a red scribble on the track. The one exception is the area close to the bottom air, about a third of the way into the map from the right side, which is actually where we had lunch, so there are no coinciding photos shown. As a test, during the visit to this park on this day, in addition to the Canon GPE2, I used MotionX GPS on my iPhone 4 to record a second track log for comparison. The iPhone 4 is supposed to be not as accurate as the iPhone 4S, but it still does a reasonable job, and this is really just to give you a point of reference. You can see from the following screen grab of Google Earth with both track logs loaded that the iPhone, which is the yellow line, doesn't wander anywhere near as much as the GPE2, which is represented by the blue line here. Sometimes, though, the iPhone oversimplified things, though I believe MotionX was logging at 10-second intervals, the same as I'd set up my GPE2. On the accuracy, though, I'd say that the GPE2 does pretty well when it's got a good view of the sky, and it wanders when there are buildings or trees around to block or hinder the signal. For me, this level of accuracy is plenty, but you'll need to make up your own mind based on these results for your own use. Of course, you can also tweak how the GPE2 behaves or creates the track log, and a more experienced geotagger would probably get better results with this than I currently am. Something else that you might want to note is that the GPE2 receiver writes its track log files in what seems to be a proprietary format, which can't be imported directly into Google Earth or Lightroom 4. To get the track log into Google Earth, you have to open the file. It's a .log file in Canon's map utility and export it as a .kmz file for Google Earth. If you open the file, and you know, it's just a text file, and I read somewhere that you can delete the first line and use it as another format, but that to me is even more trouble than exporting from map utility, so I haven't really followed up on that. As usual, I try to keep my workflow as simple as possible, using the least possible tools and steps to get where I want to be. At the moment, with the exception of when I want to see camera direction, as long as I have the GPE2 attached to the camera, I'm done. The images just appear on the maps in Lightroom. I will still have to use Canon's map utility when shooting with more than one camera, though, to enable me to tag images that I shot without the GPE2 attached. They won't have the direction information, but to their credit, Canon made it pretty easy to tag other images from the track log with just a few mouse clicks, which I guess I'll be able to live with unless I want to spring for a second unit, which I don't see me doing right now. To sync multiple cameras, though, you make sure that you have imported the track log into the map utility by plugging in the GPS receiver with a USB cable, and that is then copied to your local hard drive automatically. Then you select the images that you want to tag and hit a button to automatically add location information. The map utility adds the location from the log file based on the time that the images were shot. This, of course, relies on you having both of your camera's clocks set to the same time. As there is a setting to allow you to set the time on the camera from the satellites that it locks into, you know that the camera with the GPS is going to be accurate. But so far, the only cameras that actually support this are the 5D Mark III and the 1DX, which isn't even on the streets yet, as of May 14, 2012, that is. The 7D is also supported, but you only when you connect it with a USB cable to the camera. And also, the 7D does not support the camera direction feature. It's purely for geotagging or creating a track log. One thing that I thought was very cool is that you can see the direction that the camera is pointing on the back LCD when you have the electronic level turned on. This means that I'll be able to use software like VeloClock or the Photographer's Ephemeris to get the azimuth at which the sun or moon will rise or fall and point the camera there ready while I wait. Of course, you can use a compass, and there's one in my iPhone as well, but I still have to line up my camera with that. So, you know, now with this, I can see it right there on the camera, removing some of the guesswork. There are a number of ways to see whether or not the unit has a GPS signal. The easiest is that when the unit has a signal, the right of the two red lights on the top of the GPE2 turns on and stays on for a second or so, then goes off for 3 or 6 seconds before flashing again. If the unit doesn't have a signal, it flashes 3 times in quick succession, then waits for another 3 or 6 seconds before flashing rapidly again until it gets that signal. The difference between the 3 or 6 second interval between flashes is apparently some kind of power saving, but I wasn't able to find out when or why that kicks in. Mine's been flashing at 6 second intervals pretty much since I got it, despite me putting in a nice high powered lithium battery. Also, to confirm that you have a GPS signal, when you half press the shutter button with the GPS-E2 attached to the camera, you get a GPS indicator on the top LCD panel and on the LCD on the back of the camera if you're in live view mode, which turns solid when there's a signal or it flashes rapidly when there's no signal. The battery level indicator is similar in that it flashes once for a second every 3 or 6 seconds when everything's okay, but it blinks rapidly for 3 times when the battery's starting to run low, and then it goes out when the battery's dead, not surprisingly. The unit comes with 2 covers. One is a tightly fitting cover to protect the unit when in use off the camera. It has a window on the side to open the USB port so that you can plug it in plug a cable in that you then plug into the camera while, for example, you have it attached to your belt. There's a belt loop on it as well, so you can easily do that. Or you can just attach this unit to your belt, literally for use as a GPS receiver, and then geoencode images later at a computer. And that works with any Canon DSLR. So it's usable as just a standalone GPS receiver. There's also a second window, of course, to give you access to the switch to turn the unit on and to enable you to see the battery and GPS signal indicators. Note too that the power switch has 2 settings. On only geotags your images and doesn't create a track log. Turn the switch another notch though to log, and you'll get your images tagged and there'll be a track log file saved to the device. Back to the pouches though, the second is literally just a protective pouch to put the GPE2 in while carrying it around. Because the first case is quite tight and takes a bit of putting on and taking off, I've just been using the pouch so far, as I'm generally using the unit attached to the camera, and you have to take it out of the tighter case before you can do that. They both have their uses, and I'm glad that there is the pouch, as that suits my current workflow. I do have a couple of very small nitpicks. Slightly disappointing was that there was no battery included. I had taken my camera with me when I went to pick up the GPE2, as I planned to start using it and testing it straight away, but I had to go to a different store and buy a battery before I could use it. If I'd have known that it wasn't included, I'd have taken a charged Eneloop battery instead. Also, there is no USB cable included to plug the unit directly into a computer. Only a long and a short cable to plug the unit into the camera. 3 cables might be a bit much, but in that case, I would have liked to have seen an adapter from the Mini B to a Type A USB connector so that I could just plug the device straight into my computer to transfer the track logs. Overall though, I'm very pleased with the GPE2 GPS receiver and can finally now get into geotagging my images. It's accurate enough for my needs, though I'm not sure how it will fare when hardcore geotaggers get their hands on it. I'm really pleased though that I'm now able to tag my own images without having to jump through hoops. however easy those hoops might have been to jump through. The next step, of course, is to build this into the camera. I know that there are already some compact digital cameras out there with amazing GPS units built right into them. I had a conversation on Google Plus with Chris Miller about this, and Chris's theory is, and I'm sure he's right, that the manufacturers are concerned about battery life by just having the GPS built right into the camera. They're probably also worried about people turning the GPS functionality on by mistake and then posting their images online with basically directions to their homes embedded, which would not always be a good thing, of course. I think that it will be here soon, though, and the manufacturers all they have to do is make sure that they turn off GPS by default and then flash a message when the user turns it on, warning about battery life. It's also quite easy to remove location information when exporting images from Lightroom and other workflow tools too, so hopefully it's only a matter of time before we see this. Of course, that means that my nice new little GPE2 will be obsolete by then, but I could handle that too for the ease of having this just built in to the camera and working. Okay, so I hope that was of some use. Let's move on now to that important announcement that I mentioned in the introduction. Because of a bit of a reshuffle in my schedule for August, September, and October this year, I've decided to try and plan a series of weekend workshops in Japan, the US, Canada, the UK, and Australia. These are basically building on my Cullen Managed Digital Workflow seminars and the success of my Craft and Vision ebook, Making the Print. I've been blown away by people's reaction to Making the Print, and many have asked if I can do face-to-face workshops to build on some of the techniques discussed. So that's exactly what I'm going to do. The two-day workshop seminar is called Pixels to Pigment, and I've put together a new website to gauge interest as I plan this. Without overcomplicating things, we'll work through an entire digital photography workflow, starting from capture right through to printing. We'll be calibrating every step from capture to output and including practical exercises and demonstrations to give you the tools to streamline your workflow and get you making professional quality prints every time without tearing your hair out in the process. For details and currently tentative dates, see my Pixels to Pigment website at pigment.com. And more importantly, if you think that you'll attend one of these seminars, sign up for the newsletter using the form on the page. This will give me an idea of how big or small a venue we need at each location, and also help me to work with sponsors on the possibility of them helping with some of the overheads to reduce the cost to you. My current plans have us starting in Tokyo and maybe also going to Okinawa here in Japan, as I've already had a request to run this workshop there, and then move on to somewhere in California, then up to Vancouver, across to Toronto, then down to New York, before flying across the pond to London. And all of that is currently scheduled for the 5 weekends in September. Then, if there's enough interest, I'm hoping to go to Australia and do Sydney, Melbourne, and Perth in October. In addition to the weekend seminars, I'll also be arranging some short excursions on some of the days between, depending on what's available nearby. But most importantly right now is for you to let me know that you're interested. There's no obligation at this point, but please only fill out the form at pixels2pigment.com if you're seriously considering joining me for what I think will be an incredibly useful and fun weekend. Wow, that was certainly a housekeeping section to reckon with. Thanks for sticking with me there. And I really am looking forward to getting a chance to meet some of you on your own turf later this year. Thanks very much for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google+ and Twitter, etc. All of the links are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode. But in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.